and then you saw it settle back down again. But it's basically been extraordinarily stable for at least 18 years. So when all, you know, there's all these movements that claim all of these people are abandoning the Democratic Party. There was the so-called Blexit movement, black exit of black people leaving the Democratic Party. It's not actually shown in the data. The Democratic Party registration is very stable. Black folks still overwhelmingly voting for Democrats. The claim that the Democratic Party is being abandoned because of supposed wokeism, it's not showing up in any data. And so that's what I go by. My opinion, or whether I personally know someone that has left or joined the Democratic Party, it doesn't really matter. What matters is, what does the data show? The data doesn't show that people are abandoning the Democratic Party. We have a great bonus show for you today. An appeals court finds Florida's new social media law unconstitutional. The Supreme Court makes it tougher for inmates to win release from prison because of bad lawyering they say they've received. And lastly, Starbucks is completely exiting Russia, joining McDonald's, some McDonald's, and a bunch of other brands. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT, in sound, from way out.
DJ DJ Haim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJ!
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done?
I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here.
As families buried loved ones killed in the Buffalo Massacre, a gunman in Texas shot dead 19 children and two teachers Tuesday at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. It was the deadliest school shooting since the massacre at Sandy Hook almost a decade ago. Democrats are demanding action on gun control, while Trump and Republican lawmakers are set to address the National Rifle Association's annual meeting Friday in Houston. We'll speak with Nicole Golden of Texas Gun Sense, Michael Spies, reporter for The Trace, and with Manny Oliver, father of Joaquin, one of 17 students killed in the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida.
This is not only an issue that happened in Parkland to Patricia and Manuel and Joaquin. Right now, while we're talking, there's another shooter planning to do this. Actually, maybe right now, someone just died because of this.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. 19 children and two teachers were shot dead in an elementary school in Texas in the city of Uvalde on Tuesday. The attack on the Robb Elementary School was carried out by an 18-year-old who attended Uvalde High School. Families have begun sharing the names of some of the victims. They include 9-year-old Uzziah Garcia, 10-year-old Amory Joe Garza, 10-year-old Jose Flores, 10-year-old Xavier Lopez, 10-year-old Annabelle Guadalupe Rodriguez, and 2 fourth-grade teachers, Ava Morales and Irma Garcia. Robb Elementary School is a school with about 600 students in just 3 grades, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. The school's about 90% Latinx. Thursday was scheduled to be the last day of class for the year. The school district superintendent, Hal Harrell, spoke Tuesday.
My heart was broken today. We're a small community, and we'll need your prayers to get us through this.
The gunman has been identified as Salvador Ramos. He reportedly bought at least one of his guns on his 18th birthday a few days ago. He was shot dead in the school. Earlier in the day, he shot and critically wounded his grandmother. Tuesday's attack was the deadliest school shooting since the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut, when a 20-year-old gunman shot dead 26 people, including 20 children between the ages of 6 and 7, in 2012. On Tuesday night, President Biden addressed the nation.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done?
The shooting in Uvalde came just 10 days after an 18-year-old self-described white supremacist attacked a grocery store in the heart of Buffalo's African-American community. He shot dead 10 people, all of whom were black. On Tuesday, a funeral was held for 65-year-old Celestine Cheney. Today, the Senate will hold a confirmation hearing for Stephen Dettelbach to head the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. The agency has been without a permanent leader for 7 years. In the past, Dettelbach has supported a federal assault weapons ban and universal background checks. Voters went to the polls for primaries in Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, and Texas Tuesday. Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger both won their primaries, defeating challengers endorsed by Donald Trump. Governor Kemp, who defeated former Senator David Perdue, will face Democrat Stacey Abrams in November. She ran unopposed in the Democratic primary. In other closely watched Georgia races, former football star and Trump ally Herschel Walker won the Republican Senate primary. He'll face Senator Raphael Warnock in the general election. Far-right Republican Congressmember Marjorie Taylor Greene easily defeated five opponents in her primary. Another winner Tuesday was Democratic Congressmember Lucy McBath, who beat fellow Congressmember Carolyn Bordeaux. The two had to face each other due to redistricting. McBath is a longtime gun control activist whose 17-year-old son, Jordan Davis, was shot dead by a white man in 2012 after a dispute over loud music at a gas station in Florida. In Texas, the race between Democratic Congressmember Henry Cuellar and progressive challenger Jessica Cisneros is too close to call. The Democratic establishment, as well as AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, lined up behind Cuellar, who's an anti-choice, pro-gun Democrat whose home was raided by the FBI in January in a corruption probe. Cisneros was endorsed by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's a supporter of Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, and reproductive rights. President Biden's wrapped up his first trip to Asia as president, as tension remains high in the region. Earlier today, South Korea accused North Korea of test launching three ballistic missiles, including a possible intercontinental ballistic missile. It was the 17th missile test by North Korea this year. South Korea and the United States responded by launching their own land-to-land missile tests. Meanwhile, Japan has accused China and Russia of flying warplanes near its airspace Tuesday, while Japan was hosting other leaders from the Quad, which includes the United States, Australia, and India. China said the flights were part of an annual military cooperation drill with Russia. China's accused the Quad of becoming an Indo-Pacific version of NATO. During its summit, the leaders of the Quad agreed to launch a new maritime surveillance system in the region. The war in Ukraine is now in its 91st day. Russia is facing growing calls to end its blockade of Ukrainian ports in the Black Sea that's preventing Ukraine from exporting grain. David Beasley of the UN World Food Program condemned the blockade.
Well, to keep the ports closed, as the harvest season is now coming in Ukraine in July and August, it means a declaration of war on global food security. If you can't get the food out the fields, I mean, Ukraine grows enough food to feed 400 million people. In a time on planet Earth where we're facing extraordinary food crisis before Ukraine,
yeah.
Fuel costs, commodity prices, shipping costs were already doubling, tripling, quadrupling.
Earlier today, a top Russian official said Moscow would consider allowing for ships carrying food to leave Ukraine, but only if the West agreed to lift some of its sanctions on Russia. Separate investigations by the Associated Press and CNN have both concluded that it was Israeli forces who shot dead the Palestinian-American Al Jazeera correspondent Shireen Abu Akla 2 weeks ago in the occupied West Bank. Abu Akla was one of the best-known TV journalists in the Middle East. CNN reports it's obtained evidence suggesting Abu Akla was killed in a targeted attack by Israeli forces. CNN reports, quote, there was no active combat nor any Palestinian militants near Abu Akla in the moments leading up to her death, unquote. The Israeli military has responded saying that, quote, the claim that the shooting was intentional has no basis, they said. United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet is on a six-day trip to China. Her visit will include time in the Xinjiang region, where China's been accused of the mass imprisonment and torture of Uyghurs and other Muslims. On Tuesday, a coalition of news outlets published a series of articles based on internal Chinese police documents obtained by hackers. The trove of documents include thousands of photographs of detained Uyghurs, as well as details about a shoot-to-kill policy targeting anyone who tried to leave the detention camps. In news from Nigeria, at least 50 people, including many farmers, have been killed in an attack in Borno State by the militant group Boko Haram. One survivor said the militants arrived on motorcycles armed with guns and machetes. Roughly 40 climate activists disrupted Shell's annual shareholder meeting Tuesday in London. Three protesters were arrested, and Shell was forced to temporarily suspend the event. Climate activist Lauren McDonald spoke outside the meeting.
Whilst millions of people have just been placed into fuel poverty in the UK, Shell has just announced a record £7 billion in profit for Q1 this year. This is completely outrageous, and we need a windfall tax now. We need the UK government to impose a windfall tax on these obscene profits whilst millions are struggling, and we need that money to be redistributed to the people that need it the most.
The FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force has arrested an Iraqi man living in Ohio for aiding and abetting a plot to assassinate former President George W. Bush. Authorities say the man, Shahab Ahmed Shahab Shahab, told an FBI informant in November that he wanted to target Bush because he was, quote, responsible for killing many Iraqis and breaking apart the entire country of Iraq, unquote. Authorities say Bush's life was never at risk. Two undercover informants played key roles in the alleged plot by providing Shahab with cell phones and cell phone data cards and by helping him devise a plan that never materialized to smuggle members of ISIS into the United States to assist him. In Indiana, trans girls will no longer be allowed to compete in girls' school sports after Republican lawmakers overrode a veto by Indiana's Republican governor. Indiana is one of 35 states that have passed or proposed anti-trans legislation this year alone. Meanwhile, GLAAD has condemned a new Netflix special by comedian Ricky Gervais for including what the group called, quote, dangerous anti-trans rants masquerading as jokes. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Texas, where 19 children and two teachers were shot dead in an elementary school in the city of Uvalde on Tuesday. The attack on the Robb Elementary School was carried out by a teenager armed with guns he just bought on his 18th birthday. The gunman died in the attack. Earlier in the day on Tuesday, he shot and critically wounded his grandmother. Families have begun sharing the names of some of the victims. They include Xavier Lopez, 10 years old, Jose Flores, 10 years old, Uzziah Garcia, 9, Amory Jo Garza, 10, Annabel Guadalupe Rodriguez, 10, and two fourth grade teachers, Ava Morales and Irma Garcia. Robb Elementary School is a school with about 600 students in just three grades, second, third, and fourth. The school is about 90% Latinx. Thursday was scheduled to be the last day of class for the year. The school district superintendent, Hal Harrell, spoke Tuesday.
My heart was broken today. We're a small community, and we will need your prayers to get us through this.
Tuesday's attack was the deadliest elementary school shooting since the 2012 massacre at Sandy Hook in Connecticut, when a 20-year-old gunman killed 26 people, 20 of them children between the ages of 6 and 7. On Tuesday night, President Biden addressed the nation.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done,
The shooting in Uvalde came just 10 days after an 18-year-old self-described white supremacist attacked a grocery store in the heart of Buffalo's African-American community. He shot dead 10 people, all of whom were black. Many of them were grandmothers. On Tuesday, a funeral was held for 65-year-old Celestine Cheney. This comes as the National Rifle Association plans to host its annual meeting Friday in Houston, Texas, with more than 55,000 people set to attend and hear speeches by former President Trump and Republican Texas lawmakers, including Governor Greg Abbott and Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn. For more, we head to Texas, to the capital, Austin, to speak with Nicole Golden, Executive Director of Texas Gun Sense. Nicole, welcome to Democracy Now! On this horrific day. First of all, our condolences on the horror that has taken place in Uvalde. I mean, I was just saying this 10 days ago to the people of Buffalo. But if you can respond to what happened and the climate in Texas and what you think needs to happen.
Yeah, I'll be honest. We're all barely hanging in there. It's nothing compared to what this community must be experiencing. I'm sitting here talking to you while I'm exhausted, and my own kids are getting ready for school. I have to compartmentalize what happened in order to do the work that I do. But it's so critically important. You know, I've been involved in gun violence prevention in Texas for almost a decade. I have sat through brutal hearings at the state legislature. I have heard unbelievable arguments to our very sensible ask for common sense gun laws, laws that most Texans support, laws that law enforcement supports, laws that are working to prevent gun violence in other states. But we have a political climate here that makes it such that it's been our work has basically been, shut down, but we're here for the long haul. We're not going anywhere. And I'm certain that at some point when the political will is there, we will have built the infrastructure to see real change here. Until then, we'll keep chipping away, working in our communities to pass meaningful change and continuing with building this extremely strong movement that we've created over the past decade.
And Nicole Golden, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, only hours after this shooting, this horrific massacre that occurred, said that teachers should be armed as well. Your response?
You've probably heard this said before. If more guns made us safer, it would be the safest country in the world. That experiment has obviously failed us and failed our children completely. Guns in schools is not supported by educators. They are not teachers so that they can be armed during the day while they're trying to love and support and educate their students. We do not think that that is the answer, and we will push back if that is brought forward next legislative session.
And the alleged gunman here, Salvador Ramos, reportedly bought two assault rifles just last week. How easy is it to get a weapon like that in Texas? And are there any age restrictions at all?
That very well could have been a legal purchase. That doesn't make it right, of course. It is far too easy to walk into any number of gun retailers. Federally licensed dealers have to run a background check here in Texas, according to federal guidelines. But you can also purchase a gun through an online sale or at a gun show from a collector, for example, with no questions asked. So there are many different ways somebody can purchase a deadly firearm. Some states have closed their loopholes so that there's a background check required on every gun sale to prevent, we can't prevent every shooting, but we can definitely prevent some by trying to keep guns out of hands of potentially dangerous individuals. But that measure has not succeeded in Texas to close those loopholes, as well as other measures that we've tried to pass at the state level.
Nicole Golden, The NRA is meeting on Friday in Houston. Mm-hmm. You have Cruz going to speak there. It's not only Paxson, but Cruz, too. Decried Democrats for saying they're going to make this a political moment and call for gun control. This whole issue of the answer is to arm the teachers. The studies that have come out that show that there are 400 million guns in the United States right now, more than every man, woman, and child in this country. And the difference between the number of shootings, for example, I think there have been 30 shootings in schools in the United States this year alone, over 300 over the past 10 years, comparing it to Mexico and Texas. I mean, it is alone in the world.
Yes, we already had so many guns in circulation, and then during the pandemic, that number increased, and so did gun violence. The most recent data show us that here in Texas, we had over 4,000 Texans killed by guns in 2020. That was an increase from previous years. So we have a clear crisis, and this more guns is the answer, you know, narrative that that's been peddled is it's truly outrageous. It's again not supported by the people teaching our kids. It's largely not supported by law enforcement. Last legislative session, when lawmakers removed requirements for training and licensing to carry a handgun in Texas, we stood side by side with people from major law enforcement associations, faith leaders, survivors, teachers. I can't name the full list, pleading to please not do this. The legislature passed it anyway. The gun lobby here in Texas seems very proud of itself. And look where we are.
I wanted to ask you also about the gun lobby's efforts in recent years to market weapons, especially high-powered weapons, to children. They developed in recent years a version of the AR-15 assault rifle, the JR-15, the Junior 15, where they actually say, quote, "Our vision is to develop a line of shooting platforms that will safely help adults introduce children to the shooting sport." And this new JR-15 is supposedly built with ergonomics geared towards children. It's lighter than an adult version at 2.2 pounds and 20% smaller. So there's an actual effort by the industry to market, and many of these shootings that we're seeing in recent years are being committed by 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Your sense of the responsibility of the arms industry in terms of this new marketing effort of theirs?
Yeah, I think not only it's shameful and it's dangerous and it's disturbing, but also I really think that is not in line with what most voters think across this country and in Texas, regardless of your background politically or whether you're a gun owner or not. I don't think most people think that this extremist direction is reasonable. I think most people stand with us when we say, you know, we need some reasonable guardrails on this. When it comes to, you know, children and guns, I think there are families who can responsibly own guns, and if families choose to do that together, I think there's a way to do it that's safe. They have to lock up their guns safely. That should be mandatory. Everybody should be telling everybody to do it. Everyone should be asking when their kids go somewhere, are guns locked safely at your home? This is just the most simple way to prevent unintentional shootings and suicides or guns being stolen or lost and then used in a crime. So safe gun storage has a huge role to play, and it is an adult's responsibility to do that. It is not a child's responsibility.
I wanted to ask you about a race that's still not fully counted that happened yesterday in Texas. The incumbent anti-choice pro-gun Henry Cuellar versus the progressive Jessica Cisneros. Responding to Tuesday's mass shooting, Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, quote, On the day of the mass shooting and weeks after news of Roe, Democratic Party leadership rallied for a pro-NRA, anti-choice incumbent under investigation in a close primary. Robocalls, fundraisers, all of it. Accountability isn't partisan. This was an utter failure of leadership, AOC said. I know you have to leave for another interview. Your thoughts?
So we're a bipartisan organization. We're proud of that because people join us, you know, from a variety of backgrounds, and we all stand together with one strong voice on the need for gun violence prevention strategies in Texas. I can't really comment on specific races except to tell you that I do think that Texans and voters across the country are going to be looking for leaders who can lead us into a safer direction. And I think people should continue to push that message in their campaigns, and that voters should be paying attention because we know we can't go on like this.
Nicole Golden, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of Texas Gun Sense, speaking to us from the capital of Texas, Austin. When we come back from break, we'll be talking about the Supreme Court. It is poised to deregulate guns even further. And we'll talk about that meeting at the end of the week with the National Rifle Association in Houston, Texas. Stay with us. We did it all wrong by the Texas musician Kevin Morby. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we reported, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, plans to host its annual meeting Friday in Houston, Texas, with more than 55,000 people set to attend and hear speeches by former President Trump, Republican Texas lawmakers, including Governor Greg Abbott and Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn. This despite Tuesday's massacre at Uvalde Elementary School. The death toll so far is 19 children, mainly aged 9 and 10, and 2 fourth-grade teachers. For more, we're joined by Michael Spies, senior staff writer at The Trace, where he's reported extensively on the NRA and the fight for gun control. Michael, welcome back to Democracy Now! Let's begin with the response of Congress, the division with the Republicans and Democrats, and what's happening this weekend. It reminds me of, I believe, after Columbine, there was also a major gun meeting. But what's happening with this meeting of the NRA and what it's representing and pushing for?
Well, you know, it's their annual meeting, so it comes up every year, and it is planned well in advance. So the timing, as horrible as it is coincidental. But what it really represents, especially now, is it's sort of a, I guess you could call it a Republican pep rally. I mean, that's the main point, is to hold this big event in a theater where some of the most important Republican lawmakers, or in certain cases, former president in the country, come together to make speeches, to talk about an absolutist vision of the Second Amendment and how that particular freedom defends all other freedoms. And that's sort of the purpose, to bring people together to rally around that idea.
And Mike, in terms of the NRA was racked by major financial scandals just a few years ago. How has it been able to survive and remain intact as such a potent force on the right?
Well, I think it's barely surviving. And I actually think, and this is sort of a, you know, the president made was mistaken when he talked about the country being beholden to the gun lobby, because I'm not sure that's so much the case anymore. I think for a long time, the NRA was a potent force and did an exceptionally good job at socializing its members and most specifically Republican constituents into absorbing its ideas about the Second Amendment and its messaging and the fear mongering and all of that stuff. But I don't, I think it's sort of the machine works on autopilot now. And I think that the Republican Party effectively absorbed that platform and is now just beholden to its platform and the sort of monster that it created. But I do think that if the NRA disappeared tomorrow, for example, I'm not sure that the party would be able to move its position or would be willing to. And that's sort of the bigger issue, right? It just, it's now, there used to be a little more gray area, but it's now really just Democrats on one side and Republicans on the other. And I don't think, for instance, if there was a Republican senator who was willing to break ranks, with the exception of maybe like Romney, who's in a sort of different, unique position in the state of Utah, but if a Republican lawmaker in the Senate was willing to break ranks, I don't think they'd have to worry about the NRA drafting a primary opponent. I think just a primary opponent would surface and then would use the issue to sort of, beat the incumbent over the head with. And that's sort of the predicament that we're in.
And you've been following especially the Supreme Court and its possible upcoming case on pistol permits. Could you talk about that as well?
Yes. So in for a long time, in order to get a permit to carry a concealed weapon in the city of New York, or in the state of New York, rather, there were a number of boxes you had to check off, one of which was you had to provide a good reason for needing to carry a gun. There are other things you have to do, too, along with training. You have to pay a fee. You have to undergo reference checks, which are especially important because, as you can see, when it comes to the, you know, background checks, there are a lot of factors that aren't part of that process. And that case has now been challenged in the Supreme Court, and a decision should be coming down imminently about whether or not the permitting system here in New York is constitutional. It seems obviously likely that the Supreme Court is going to find in favor of the plaintiff and will probably strike down the idea of whether or not it's constitutional to require applicants to say whether or not they, or to give, to require applicants to provide a good reason for needing to carry a weapon. But there's a larger potential issue, which is that it seems also plausible that the Supreme Court could do away with the concept of permits entirely and say that those constitute an infringement. And that would obviously be it's hard to overstate what a change that would be in New York, and how also it's not.
You're talking about open carry.
Not open carry, concealed carry, meaning that the right now the permit that you need in order to carry a concealed handgun in New York, you need to get a permit and go through all the processes I just mentioned. So, in some ways, to be totally honest, open carry can be, it's unnerving to see. On the one hand, on the other hand, it's, you can see someone who's carrying a weapon, and that provides its own, you know, there's some sort of, it's a signal, at least you can, you know, whereas when you're living in a city of 8 million people, and now all of a sudden it's the case where it formerly was very unlikely that anybody would be legally carrying a concealed firearm, changing to virtually anybody could be carrying a concealed firearm. It's very hard to imagine how law enforcement, which already struggles to deal with effective policing in the city of New York, I'm not sure how you deal with that. And I'm not sure how that plays out on a subway, right? Where this isn't comparable to other states that have permissive gun laws and make it easy to carry concealed firearms. There's no other city in this country that has 8 million people in it. There's no other city where you have people crammed on in that situation, right? People crammed on subways, where they bump into each other on sidewalks, or there's just excessive traffic all the time, and people are in a bad mood. There's any number of reasons why it's a completely different situation here than it is anywhere else. Also true in other states that have restrictive permitting laws like California, et cetera, where, you know, you have the city of Los Angeles or San Francisco. The cultures of those places are totally different than they are in, say, you know, Tennessee or Vermont or any other, or Georgia, states that have fewer people than just this city alone does.
And today, Mike, the Senate is holding a confirmation hearing for Stephen Dettelbach to head the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives. The agency has been without a permanent leader for 7 years. In the past, Dettelbach has supported a federal assault weapons ban and universal background checks. Can you comment on this?
Well, I think the ATF is, as I'm sure, you know, viewers know, has been a largely toothless agency that hasn't had much, you know, it hasn't been able to provide effective oversight at all, really, in quite a long time. And not having a leader is one of the ways in which that is made possible. I think one thing that the ATF should focus on and has not been able to, and this in part is part of the larger issue when it comes to illegal guns, is focusing more on how to better regulate gun dealers. One thing that's routinely come up is, you know, this idea of straw purchasers, bad apple gun dealers, shops that are routinely and clearly selling weapons to people that are, or selling weapons to people that intend to traffic them, is a known issue that hasn't been effectively policed at all. There's also another problem, which is that, if you didn't know, gun stores aren't required to secure their wares in a way that is any different than any other place of business, which is to say that it's incredibly easy, and it happens quite frequently, for people, you know, incredibly easy for robbers and burglars to break into gun shops and easily steal a ton of weapons. And then those wind up also going through the illegal pipeline, adding to more guns on the streets. You know, as we were saying before, there's hundreds of millions of weapons in the country right now, more than people.
Michael Spies, we want to thank you for being with us, senior staff writer at The Trace. Next up, we'll speak with Manny Oliver, the father of Joaquin Guac, one of 17 students killed in 2018 in the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And we'll also hear the Senate floor speech of Senator Chris Murphy, who had just been elected to the Senate but was still a House member when Sandy Hook took place in his district, the massacre 10 years ago. Stay with us. Wildfires by Salt. During that break, we showed images of George Floyd killed 2 years ago today and the protests that ensued. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. After Tuesday's massacre that killed at least 19 children between second and fourth grade and two fourth grade teachers at Uvalde Elementary School in Texas, Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy spoke passionately from the Senate floor in a call for action on gun control. Murphy came to Congress representing the district that included Sandy Hook Elementary School, where 10 years ago, 26 people, 20 students, and six staff were killed. This is Senator Murphy's full address.
Mr. President, there are 14 kids dead in an elementary school in Texas right now. What are we doing? What are we doing? Just days after a shooter walked into a grocery store to gun down African American patrons, we have another Sandy Hook on our hands. What are we doing? There have been more mass shootings than days in the year. Our kids are living in fear every single time they set foot in a classroom because they think they're going to be next. What are we doing? Why do you spend all this time running for the United States Senate? Why do you go through all the hassle of getting this job, of putting yourself in a position of authority, if your answer is that as this slaughter increases, as our kids run for their lives, we do nothing? What are we doing? Why are you here? If not to solve a problem as existential as this. This isn't inevitable. These kids weren't unlucky. This only happens in this country and nowhere else. Nowhere else do little kids go to school thinking that they might be shot that day. Nowhere else do parents have to talk to their kids, as I have had to do, about why they got locked into a bathroom and told to be quiet for 5 minutes just in case a bad man entered that building. Nowhere else does that happen except here in the United States of America, and it is a choice. It is our choice to let it continue. What are we doing? In Sandy Hook Elementary School, after those kids came back into those classrooms, they had to adopt a practice in which there would be a safe word that the kids would say if they started to get thoughts in their brain about what they saw that day. If they started to get nightmares during the day, reliving stepping over their classmates' bodies as they tried to flee the school. In one classroom, that word was monkey. And over and over and over through the day, kids would stand up and yell, monkey. And a teacher or a paraprofessional would have to go over to that kid, take them out of the classroom, talk to them about what they had seen, work them through their issues. Sandy Hook will never, ever be the same. This community in Texas will never, ever be the same. Why? Why are we here? If not to try to make sure that fewer schools and fewer communities go through what Sandy Hook has gone through, what Uvalde is going through. Our heart is breaking for these families. Every ounce of love and thoughts and prayers we can send, we are sending. But I'm here on this floor to beg, to literally get down on my hands and knees and beg my colleagues. Find a path forward here. Work with us to find a way to pass laws that make this less likely. I understand my Republican colleagues will not agree to everything that I may support, but there is a common denominator that we can find. There is a place where we can achieve agreement that may not guarantee that America never, ever again sees a mass shooting. that may not overnight cut in half the number of murders that happen in America. It will not solve the problem of American violence by itself. But by doing something, we at least stop sending this quiet message of endorsement to these killers whose brains are breaking, who see the highest levels of government doing nothing, shooting after shooting. What are we doing? Why are we here? What are we doing?
What are we doing? Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy asks. On the floor of the Senate, in a passionate call for action on gun control just hours after the massacre of 21 people at the Uvalde Elementary School in Texas. For more, we end today's show with Manuel Oliver, Manny Oliver, father of Joaquin, one of 17 students killed in the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. He's an artist. He's an activist. He's never stopped that activism since Guac was killed. By chance, he was in El Paso painting a mural against gun violence in 2019 when a far-right gunman carried out a mass shooting at the Walmart store there, killing 23 people, most of them Latinx. Yesterday, it was Uvalde. Manny, I want to just say our condolences again and again to you, your co-founder of the gun reform group Change the Ref, because I am sure for you this never stops. Can you respond to what happened yesterday, to what Senator Murphy is saying, your call to what you think needs to happen now?
Sure. Thank you for having me in your show. It's always a pleasure. What happened yesterday is not a surprise to me. What Murphy is doing, it is a surprise to me. I know Murphy personally. I know that he stands along with us in this fight. But it's time to speak out to all his colleagues in Senate and Congress and do things like what he did yesterday. That's why we elected these people, to do what he did. Now, it was not for them to wait for 19 people to die, 19 kids, babies to die, so they can take action. Because we've been trying to put things together since the last 5 years. What they are doing today, we have done it every single day without resting, trying to prevent this from happening. We talked to the president, to members of Congress and Senate, And now you see how now they're paying attention. So I don't see what's going to happen after this. I still don't believe until I see results. In the meantime, we're going to keep on doing what we do best, which is fighting back gun violence.
And Manny, I wanted to ask you, there have been over 27 school shootings in the United States in just the 5 months of this year. We're seeing also an alarming increase in suicides among young people between the ages of 10 and 24, increased 42% over the last decade. And according to a recent report, can you talk about I raised this to an earlier guest today, the NRA and the gun manufacturing industry focusing on young people, on marketing their products to young people?
I think there are new demographics that are feeling attracted to guns. However, this is the result of that not having any restriction. This is the only industry in America, the land of restrictions, that actually has no restriction at all, the gun industry. So they have the ability to put their products in the hands of whoever they want. I also have to say that school shootings represent probably less than 2% of gun violence in America. But regardless that stat, we always react in a more shocking way because now we're talking about kids. But this is a usual life in the United States. 100 people, 110, 12 people will die today after that shooting yesterday. And the gun industry seems to not be concerned about it. They're going to keep on moving on. And politicians who actually depend on them for their campaigns will also support those ideas. So it's a hard battle, and it's going to take way more than what we have done so far.
I also wanted to ask you about the remarks that were made by one of the most famous basketball coaches yesterday, Steve Kerr of the Golden State Warriors. Golden State was playing the Dallas Mavericks in Texas. And I think we may have a tape of it. If we can, let's go to the tape of Steve Kerr talking not about basketball, but about what happened there in Texas.
Since we left Shoot-Around, 14 children were killed 400 miles from here, and a teacher. And in the last 10 days, we've had elderly black people killed in a supermarket in Buffalo. We've had Asian churchgoers killed in Southern California. And now we have children murdered at school. When are we going to do something? I'm tired. I'm so tired of getting up here and offering condolences to the devastated families that are out there. I'm so tired of the, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm tired of the moments of silence. Enough. There's 50 senators right now who refuse to vote on H.R. 8, which is a background check rule that the House passed a couple of years ago. It's been sitting there for 2 years. And there's a reason they won't vote on it, to hold on to power. So I ask you, Mitch McConnell, I ask all of you senators who refuse to do anything about the violence and school shootings and supermarket shootings, I ask you, are you going to put your own desire for power ahead of the lives of our children and our elderly and our churchgoers? Because that's what it looks like. It's what we do every week. So I'm fed up. I've had enough. We're going to play the game tonight. But I want every person here, every person listening to this, to think about your own child or grandchild or mother or father or sister, brother. How would you feel if this happened to you today? We can't get numb to this. We can't sit here and just read about it and go, well, let's have a moment of silence. Yeah, go Dubs, you know. Come on, Mavs, let's go. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go play a basketball game. And 50 senators in Washington are going to hold us hostage. Do you realize that 90% of Americans, regardless of political party, want background check, universal background check? 90% of us. We are being held hostage by 50 senators in Washington who refuse to even put it to a vote, despite what we, the American people, want. They won't vote on it because they want to hold on to their own power. It's pathetic. I've had enough.
That was Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, talking in Dallas, Texas last night before the game with the Dallas Mavericks. Manny, your response to Steve Kerr's plea to the nation?
I texted Steve last night. We are friends. We know each other. He did the right thing. Steve lost his dad from gun violence, so he knows exactly what this means for a lot of people. And he just did what a regular human being will do. We are used to keep on going and then watch a game. That's it. That's how the majority of Americans live their lives. We are very arrogant to think that we are making a mistake. But we are making a huge mistake here. And Steve Kerr decided to stop that comfort zone for millions of Americans and say, you know what? This is what's going on out there. Outside of the court, we're killing each other. And you should know that. And that is more important than anything right now. So I would love to have celebrities and influencers doing the same thing. And they were at some point involved. I remember almost 5 years ago, when in Washington we had a lot of Hollywood faces and performers and singers and rappers, and everyone was there, like getting involved as a big movement. And now you don't see them. This is not something where you show your face once in a while. to get more followers. This is something that is not over. It's actually worse than 5 years ago. So this is a big call to all those faces. Guys, it's not over. This is actually the beginning of the fight. Get involved, and it's not about your money. It's about your potential words and how many people you can reach.
Manny, as you said, Steve Kerr, the coach's father, Malcolm Kerr, was murdered in Lebanon in 1984. He was the president of American University in Beirut. But Manny, I wanted to ask you about your message to the parents. You're a parent who's lost a son yourself. They were there at the Civic Center for hour upon hour. These guns are so powerful, these semi-automatic weapons, that when their kids were shot, apparently it's just one class of fourth graders that were gunned down with their teachers. He was holed up in that space, the shooter. They had to wait hours to give DNA because the kids are unrecognizable. The power of these weapons. We still don't know exactly if this is the exact number. Can you give a message to them and also talk about what the Parkland survivors did? People like David Hogg, who we had you on with last time, Emma Gonzalez and others, who from the second this happened, demanded change.
Well, the story is a little different on terms of the victims. Because what happened in Parkland, it happened to a generation that was ready to go ahead and speak out, very vocal, very rebel, teenagers, most of them. So they had that energy to go ahead and take everything by their own hands. That is not possible here because we're talking about babies. We're talking about very young kids. What the parents did, including myself, is totally something that we had no idea. We waited. Don't ask me how. I was able to survive those initial moments, those initial weeks and months, understanding, you know, trying to convince myself that I lost my son and I won't be able to hug him ever again. Now, my only advice at this point, which I'm not in any position to give advices to anyone that has lost a kid, because I don't do that. We all have our own personal way of reacting, is to take advantage of the media right now. Whoever is in that city has access to the media to send a message of pain, of anger, of motivation, of whatever it helps for all of us to solve this problem. So, and the reason why I call for that is that those cameras won't be there for long, because that's part of the problem. We have a template, and the coverage of this shooting will last probably for the next week. And then we jump to the next one. So this is our sad reality. And we need to change the reality as a big picture. This is not about video games. This is not about mental health. That happens all around the planet. This is about guns and easy access to guns. Whoever defers that is wrong and is not understanding where the problem is.
And Manuel Oliver, we have only about 30 seconds, but I'm wondering in terms of, were you able to affect, if not at the national level, at the state level in Florida after the Parkland shooting, some changes in gun policy?
We got changes in the opposite way. Now we have Ron DeSantis as the governor, who is planning to leave us before getting out of the office an open carry law. So God bless us unless we get rid of this guy, which I'm planning to do.
Well, Manuel Oliver, our love to Patricia, your wife. Manny is co-founder of the gun reform group Change the Ref, father of Joaquim, one of the 17 people killed in the 2018 mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Of course, we'll continue to follow the story, what's happening in Congress, what's happening in Texas, and what's happening around the world. Families have begun sharing the names of the victims and will end with their names again as we started. Xavier Lopez, 10. Jose Flores, 10.
Uzziah Garcia, 9. Amory Joe Garza, 10. Annabel Guadalupe Rodriguez, 10. And 2 fourth grade teachers. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Noreen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Cam Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Conlon, Juan Carlos Davila, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
You're listening to Away with Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. In English, if we're talking about something that's not going to happen, we might say it's going to happen when hell freezes over or when pigs fly. But in Spanish, you can describe something impossible by saying it's going to happen on the day when cows fly, el día que las vacas vuelan. And in Italy, it's not cows or pigs flying improbably, it's donkeys. They say the equivalent of when donkeys fly. And it turns out that there's a fancy name for this rhetorical device. It's called an adynaton. That's A-D-Y-N-A-T-O-N, adynaton. It comes from the Greek word that means impossible. And adynatons go all the way back to antiquity, and you'll find them in lots and lots of languages around the world today. Like in the Malay language, for example, they'll say, it's going to happen when cats grow horns.
Cats get up to all kinds of trouble. I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, Grant, here's one of my favorites. It's from Bulgarian. It translates as, oh, yeah, that'll happen when the pig in yellow slippers climbs the pear tree. Not just any pig. Not just any slippers. The pig in yellow slippers.
The pig in yellow slippers. That's fantastic. So all around the world. I guess you'll share a bunch of these later.
How did you know?
Yeah. My favorite, of course, is the French, which I have an affinity for, when chickens have teeth. Well, don't wait until chickens have teeth to give us a call, 877-929-9673. Email us, words at waywardradio.org, or talk to us on Twitter at WAYWORD.
Hi there. You have a way with words.
Well, hello there.
Well, hello.
This is Kamala. I'm calling from Anchorage, Alaska, and I am so happy to be talking to you guys.
Hi, Kamala.
I'm a nurse, and I've been a nurse for, we'll just say a long time. We won't say how long. But I have been taking care of elder patients for quite some time. I'm now in public health, but I took care of patients who had open heart surgery, pre and post surgery. And a lot of my patients would come back to me after their surgery, and we'd be so excited that they came through great and they were feeling great and looking great. And, you know, I would go in and inevitably ask them on one morning, you know, how are you feeling today? Or, you know, how's it going today? And a lot of them would say, well, I haven't grown gills yet, which I always thought was really funny. And, you know, I thought it was cute. But a couple of months ago, a friend of mine who lives in L.A. Was telling me about her elder neighbor who had gotten his COVID-19 vaccine. And the first, he got really, really sick after the first vaccine, which, you know, it happens to quite a few people. And he's an elder, so he was kind of down for a few days. And so when he went to get a second dose, she said, well, you know, how are you feeling? And he said, well, I haven't grown gills yet. And so I thought, that's got to be something. Where does that come from?
Is that a thing? Yeah.
You know, right. What is that? Where is it from?
Oh, I love that. The one that I've been hearing when you ask people, you know, how have you had any side effects from the COVID vaccine? Well, they were saying, when do I get my mutant powers or when do I get my superpowers? So I'm wondering if I'm wondering if it's a generational thing. The young generation wants to become X-Men or superheroes, and the older generation just is worried that they're going to become a freak or a body snatcher or something. That's something out of an old black and white movie, you know?
Right. I know. I kept wondering if it was just a saying about, you know, reversion and evolution or, you know, devolution or something. I wasn't sure where it came from, but I couldn't find anything about it. So I just wanted to turn to the people I knew would know.
Yeah, I've seen that come up, but I don't know if it's a thing, but I do love that. I love the humor around serious situations.